So what do you get when you cross a wizened Gen Xer with a proud millennial?
Here we go.
A mixtape filled with
Britney Spears songs?
Or maybe a rotary landline telephone
that takes selfies?
Maybe a Tom and Jerry cartoon.
Or Tom and Jerry each get participation trophies?
No, 21st century solutions.
According to Kaylin and Ramsey.
How you doing today, Kaylin?
I'm doing good. We went to the Grand Ole Opry last night, which felt like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I'm a little tired, but looking forward to the rest of the week.
So worth it. So worth it.
Yes, exactly.
Well, today I think we're going to talk about some fun stuff. Talk is cheap, but everything else is expensive. When Thomas Friedman declared the world is flat back in 2005, he was not a flat earther. That whole business came a bit later. But he was referring to the rising power of global communications and supply chains. Fast forward to 2022, and it feels like free instantaneous communication is pretty much perfected, but cost-effective international supply chains are pretty much toast. At this point, it feels like just-in-time delivery is backfiring. So what can we do to minimize the impacts of supply shortages and rising prices?
Well, I think you should start by explaining to us what just-in-time delivery is.
Good point. Just-in-time delivery, well, that was quite the buzzword. It started in probably the 1980s and got big in the 90s, just-in-time delivery, or JIT. Probably perfected around the turn of the 21st century, but just-in-time delivery really relies on two things to work really well. First, you have to have very precise, effective tracking of inventory. And second, you need to have reliable and predictable delivery of goods. So JIT allowed companies to save lots and lots of money by drastically reducing their inventory. And it works great unless either of those two things break down. And this year, deliveries of supplies and raw materials were disrupted. And so along with labor shortages, that led to products not getting finished, not getting manufactured. And so that lack of inventory made shortages appear very quickly to customers because there was really no buffer and no sort of backlog to protect people from that. So in many ways, like, people even live just in time. Like, if you're ordering all your stuff from Amazon and getting your food from DoorDash, like, you're living a just-in-time delivery lifestyle. But that sort of makes people vulnerable to disruptions in supply chains, kind of the same way that companies were vulnerable to disruption when, you know, all this weird stuff started happening with COVID. So, I mean, that's kind of where we're at today, it seems like.
Exactly. And what greater example of that than our toilet paper shortage of 2020?
Oh, the great toilet paper shortage of 2020.
I think that's a really simple, you know, way to recognize it as consumers was we were all up
JIT
Schitt's
Creek. Was in the toilet.
Yes.
Oh, man.
My family was okay. I had enough toilet paper to see us through, but I do know that, you know, my husband was working for a very large sewer department at that time, and the backlog that they received of items that were not toilet paper being used was
yeah, you know, generally I don't like to use the word backlog and toilet kind of in the same sentence most times.
Unfortunately, that's what happened.
Yeah, no, and what does it say about a society when, like, something crazy in the world happens and you're like, toilet paper, like, that's the most important thing that we need to make sure we don't run out of.
Right, exactly. And it's, it's always kind of been a constant thing that's there with, you know, the weather that we experience all around the United States. What's the first thing that happens when we get weather that's going to be, you know, it's going to be unpredictable. And can you get to the store? Everybody mass panic buys instead of keeping those supplies on hand for when it does happen.
Supply chains now, so like supply chains over the last two decades have gone completely global. So you've got raw materials being shipped across the planet and then manufactured into, you know, a piece of a good, and then it's being shipped across the planet to a different place where it then gets manufactured into a final product. And then it gets shipped again, and it goes back to maybe even somewhere near where it started in the first place. You know, one example that's near and dear to our hearts is, of course, the solar industry. You know, since we both work for Easy Solar Loan and we're like in that world all the time. But right now, that's impacting us. I mean, what are you hearing about that? Because we've got, you know, issues around prices, and we've got issues around availability, and we've got, you know, potential tariffs. Like, what's the buzz, Kaylin, from the solar companies that you talk to and that you are connected with online? Like, what are they saying?
You know, they have all been having supply issues on all their supplies, not just solar panels. We also know there's been a major battery shortage, as well as just other electrical equipment. And that affects their ability to get their jobs done. It's a less of a problem for the companies who were able to have a large stock prior to 2020. And it seems as though the ones who have the small installation companies are just as much at risk as the big companies who are not receiving their panel and inverters and battery shipments on time, or even if they're even being shipped. You know, we've got some people who are like, we've been waiting for 12 months on this order that hasn't even shipped yet, and we have no idea when it's going to ship. And it just causes panic in the homeowners. It causes panic in the business owners. And we've got to get solar manufacturing inside of the United States. That would be a huge help. And we know people who are working on it. We've got a client that we've known really well for a very long time who's working on a new distribution center and bringing manufacturing to the state of Texas. So there are people out there trying to solve this problem, but those solutions take time, and it's a now problem.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's definitely multi-layered. And the issues have, like you said, there are ships in port that they're not even, some of the ships are not even in port. Like I keep seeing maps of the ships that are currently outside of Shanghai, because right now in Shanghai, the port is open, but the city is in pretty severe lockdown. And so they're not able to process the incoming ships very quickly and effectively right now. And so they are backed up. And then even when you can get shipments going from China, you know, my understanding is that, you know, prices today are something like four times higher to ship a container box from China over to the US than they were back in 2020, you know, before all of this COVID stuff happened. So, you know, shipping is really difficult. And then you have to look at for solar, you know, they solar is manufactured, you know, polysilicon is one of the main ingredients, if I said that correctly. But so it takes a very purified form of silicon to make the solar cells. And then you manufacture the solar cells, and those are, you know, much smaller components. And then the solar cells are assembled into solar panels. And those solar panels are the pieces that are installed you know, as part of the array that goes on top of your house. And like I was saying before, each one of those steps in the process happen in different places around the planet. So you have most of the manufacturing of solar cells in particular in parts of Asia. And so those, even the manufacturing that we have in the United States is mostly more of fabrication, in the sense that we're taking solar cells that came from Southeast Asia and manufacturing those into solar panels. So when we have shortages or price shocks or delays or new tariffs related to solar cells, that throws off even the American manufacturing. So, you know, there's just a lot going on all at once that is sort of headwinds against the solar industry here at the moment.
Yes. And speaking from experience, most solar contractors, they just want to be able to install as much solar as possible to help homeowners and help the environment. And when they have to raise their prices because of these shortages and because of these tariffs that are, you know, weighing heavily on the industry right now, they feel terrible. They want people to, everybody to be able to go solar. And the higher those prices climb, the less economic it's going to be for homeowners. And while, you know, it's important from an environmental standpoint, it also has to make sense for that homeowner and their finances. And the higher we get with these prices, the less and less that makes sense. Of course, our utilities are going up, our gas in our vehicles is going up. So it does offset it some, but the whole idea since we started Easy Solar Loan is getting the soft costs of solar down. And as they raise the prices of the equipment, those soft costs go up too, because those soft costs are based on a percentage of that contract or that installation price. So the soft costs we think about in solar every day, number one is loan dealer fees, which for those who don't know, a lot of the larger organizations out there that do finance solar, they have a very high premium for getting that loan, and it is built into the solar installation contract. So if that solar installation contract is $45,000, it's going to be 30% on top of that added into your solar contract. So really, if inflation is happening in these contracts, that's just making more money for these large organizations who we are trying to combat with fair personal secured loan products that we don't charge fees for, so that it does make sense for homeowners. And
so how is Easy Solar Loan different than those other ones that you have, that you're describing, with those dealer fees that are tied directly to the prices?
Well, our price is what you pay in interest. We don't add anything on top of your loan. So if, it is going to make their finance charge go up the more their contract costs, but it's not going to put that hard hitting dollar amount of 30% on top of the contract price. They can actually buy solar for 30%, and I'm using 30% because that's the highest we have right now. You know, there are fees that are lower than that. So let's say 30% to 20%. And so we are able to offer loans to customers on their installations that brings their contract price down by that much, which is a huge savings, and makes it make solar make more sense for more homeowners.
Yeah, that makes sense. But it's still a good time to go solar, right? I mean, prices are still really effective in a lot of markets and a lot of climates. You can get solar for less than the cost of energy now. Plus, you're locking in your energy costs. You're getting the price of equipment now, which is not going to go up later. You're locking in your interest rate using an Easy Solar Loan, so your payments are not going to go up. You're not going to be affected by rising energy prices in the future. So in many cases, it now is the time to do it. And it's not just solar, right? I mean, it seems like everywhere you turn and every part, there's prices are just going up. Like, we've got inflation, and it's related to transportation shortages. It's related to labor, you know, the difficulties that companies are having with labor shortages due to either COVID or due to, you know, the quarantines after COVID exposures or whatever.
And the wars that has stopped us all from buying products from Russia has also.
Yes.
One of the biggest things in my life as we pull a fifth wheel around the country is the price of diesel. And, we don't do a lot of driving around other than when we're pulling the RV. We like to, kind of stay put and do things around our surroundings, so we're not spending or using that much diesel. But the price of diesel has gone up by at least a dollar in the last few months. And when gas prices came back down, the price of diesel did not.
That's not fair.
Yeah, exactly. So I know there's and that affects not just personal use, that also affects the contractors who are bringing these supplies to their jobs and all of that. So it also inflations in other aspects of the market are also inflating solar prices. So we feed a family of five, and every time we go to the grocery store, we're just seeing prices getting higher and higher. And I always try to buy the highest amount of food that I can for the lowest price. Like, I don't look at the price of, how much the package is. I look at the price by unit, and that seems to really help. We don't have a lot of storage in here like we did at our, we didn't have a lot of storage at our old house either. I shouldn't say that. Our old house was built in 1958. Storage was kind of the last thing on the mind in 1958, I think. It's a little bit harder in an RV. And so I know a lot of families out there, that large families who do make sure that they buy in bulk and they have all of these items, ready in case of an emergency where, it's either not feasible for them to buy it in the store or it's unavailable in the store. So I do know that there are families out there who are just really feeling this. I see posts on Facebook and Instagram, the grocery bill is just the highest cost for us, especially as parents. And like you were talking about on supply and demand, it's a lot of city people, they're using DoorDash and those kind of things, and those fees have gone up as well with the prices of fuel and such. So it's affecting everybody, no matter where you live or how you live.
One of the ways that sort of economists and others sort of talk about when you're in an inflationary situation, the more that you can translate currency into hard goods, the better off you may be in the short term. So that's just like a wonky way of saying buy it now and store it. Because if like the value of a dollar is not going to be as high in a week, then you should translate that dollar into something else, because it's still, a loaf of bread today is going to be a loaf of bread next week if you can store it. Another thing that we do, we have, a chest freezer in the garage, and we found a local rancher last year, and we bought a quarter of a cow. We affectionately now refer to all of the beef that we eat as Bessie. which is, you know, kind of weird, but it's nice to have, you know, a good freezer full of meat that, you know, you buy it once. If you time it out and get the right amounts, maybe you can buy it once a year and then be able to have it. So there's also, we have in community supported agriculture. So at our local farmers market, there are several local farmers that you can get essentially a subscription. So, you know, you sign up for a flat amount and that gets you a box of vegetables every week. So it's fun because we can, you know, take a trip to the farmers market each weekend and pick up a box of veggies. And then there's also, you know, you can do sustainable seafood. Get a subscription service to, there's some folks out of Alaska that do salmon and other seafood shares, and they, you know, freeze it and pack it in dry ice and ship it out to your place. Something like that, you know, Alaska is obviously not nearby, but when you're talking about seafood, it's definitely something that happens kind of around the world. And that's a good answer from a sustainability perspective, just because the fisheries need to kind of be protected. And so, you know, signing up with a sustainable harvesting group like that may not be super inexpensive, but it's definitely supporting folks that are doing it the right way. So that all being a long way to say that there's alternatives to even just shopping each week at the grocery store. There's ways to get your food lined up and, you know, hey, I gotta have a garden. I guess if you don't live inside of a rolling tin can. If you live in one place kind of throughout the year, it sure is nice to have a garden.
Yes. And I, you know, but prior to this move, that's exactly what we did as well, is, you know, we bought a half a cow from a local farmer, and, you know, trips to the farmer's market on the weekend. You take a lot of cost out of it when you buy it direct from the farmer. Yep. And then that money stays within your own community as well, which is exactly what we're looking for, community-based solutions. And even on the road, we've been able to do that. Everywhere we go has a, you know, we can't sign up for a CSA like you can, but we can go and buy them direct from the farmers. And not only is it more economic for your wallet, but it also, they're also just better. They haven't been sitting in a storeroom for weeks. You know, they haven't been touched by everybody else at the grocery store. So you're getting more quality product by going direct to the source, as well as probably a little bit cheaper product as well.
Yeah, probably less chemicals, less pesticides, less fertilizer.
Yes.
All that small stuff. I mean, you know, we're at this place. I find it so interesting because, you know, in 2005, you know, we had come off of sort of the doldrums of the Y2K and the internet crash, and people were sort of rebuilding. And, you know, I remember it as being a very optimistic time. And at that time, it's like, man, the future is coming. And in the future, we're going to be able to have free instantaneous communication. We're going to be talking to anybody anywhere in the world, like on video, and we'll be able to do that. And, you know, we're going to be able to just travel anywhere we want. And we have all these global supply chains and, you know, trade and going back and forth. Well, one of those happened and one of those kind of fell apart. Yeah. And I'm super happy about like this notion of instantaneous free communication. Like, that's awesome. Like, we have at work, we have teams that are around the world, different places around the planet. We just like set up with a video feed and like, you know, hanging with our people. And it's like, what time is it over there? And it's like the other side of the planet. So it's like the middle of the night. I get such a kick out of that.
Yes, I think the ability to communicate with each other and solve problems, it is going to help us in the long run.
Absolutely.
Take ideas from each other and see what other communities outside of our little circle are doing gives us more advantage to see who's successful and who's flourishing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it helps us to solve these supply chain issues in terms of, working through and looking at what we're going to do. So, I think a lot of this stuff is going to work itself out. A lot of it has to do with just the state of the world right now, like you said, in terms of like the wars that are going on, or just the unrest and uncooperation between and among countries. I'm hopeful that that's going to get better. A lot of this stuff was sort of set off by COVID pandemic stuff. That stuff has gotten a lot better. I mean, who knows? We're still sort of in the midst of that. But I'm hopeful and optimistic that many of these things are going to work themselves out. And in the meantime, it just gave us a big reminder that closest to home is good. Local is better. At least that's what I think, in terms of figuring out and how to solve and how to do this stuff.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I've got to witness all sorts of communities over the last year. And I still definitely have faith. And like you said, it's temporary. We have these influxes in our economy and our society. I'm seen it my entire life. I grew up around the timber industry, which has always been very up and down. And we will come out the other side.
Right on. Well, it was so great talking to you today, Kaylin, as always.
Me
Talk to you
too.
later.
All right, see ya.